IVM.
Hi, I'm Utsav, a behavior researcher by training and a slow traveler by passion. Postcards from Nowhere is a travel podcast where I condense a decade of travel experiences and explore not just the where, but also the why and how to travel. My stories emerged from slow traveling the less explored parts of the world: Bosnia and Herzegovina, Armenia, Uzbekistan, and even China. At the end of each story, I give practical tips and new ideas about how to travel better. This week, we travel to the highlands of Tibet and uncover an alternate history of milk. We discover the lessons it holds as we understand the food choices of the places we travel to. In April 2023, a group of researchers from the Max Planck Institute of Geoanthropology in Jena, Germany, published a paper titled "Paleoproteomic Evidence Reveals Daring Supported Prehistoric Occupation of the Highland Tibetan Plateau." Whew. Let me catch my breath. But why am I reading an academic paper about daring in Tibet? Because the moment I spotted this paper, it took me back to my 2014 trip to Spiti, Himachal Pradesh. Back to a particular interaction with Deepak, our driver, philosopher, and travel guide, all rolled into one. We drove between Nako and Tabo, one of the many popular stops in the Shimla-Spiti-Manali route. We stopped at a place to get our tourist meal: bread butter, Maggi, and pancakes. Our driver Deepak refused all food and brought out a whitish-brown cuboidal piece of candy, which resembled a dried agre ka petha. He popped one into his mouth and with some considerable effort started to chew on it. The candy seemed hard and continued to remain so even with continuous chewing. This behavior was repeated many times during the trip. It seemed like an addiction to him, much like the drivers in the planes who chewed on tobacco to keep themselves alert during long drives. I finally asked, and he said that the candy was called churpi. Just that, it was no candy at all. Deepak's favorite snack was not just a personal oddity, but it had its enthusiasts in the greatest land empire the world has ever seen: the Mongols. By some counts, at its peak, the Mongol Empire stretched nearly 31 million square kilometers, an area of land roughly the size of the African continent. Large campaigns on land plus the nomadic nature of Mongolians meant that they often carried their food with them. They herded goats, sheep, camels, yak, oxen, and horses, which could present as a ready supply of meat. One often misunderstood aspect of the Mongol diet was that they heavily depended on meat. The reality is quite the opposite. They actually rarely ate meat and mostly did so when the animal died of natural causes. What they valued the animals for was their milk. But the vast expanse of landscapes they conquered, along with a lack of refrigeration, meant that milk in itself had a limited life. Thus, the milk came to be transformed into curd, which prolonged its life a little more, but it soured too soon. Instead, Mongols converted the milk into kuruts, a form of dried milk curd, which can be considered close to cheese. What the Mongols called kurut, the Uzbeks called gurt, and Iran, Iraq, Syria, Egypt, and Turkey called kashk. Thousands of miles away, Deepak called it churpi. His Tibetan counterparts in Himachal called it chura. It comes in a soft form, but also a hard one, the kind that Deepak was chewing on. Traditional churpi is 100% natural and is free from any kind of preservatives. It's a little brown in color and contains healthy fats, essential nutrients, and protein, as it is a yak milk recipe. So it's no wonder that Deepak found it to be a great substitute for food. Owing to its low moisture content, it can be easily stored for 8 to 12 months, thereby becoming an all-season food source, especially in the harsh winters of Himachal and the Tibetan Plateau. The churpi, or the chura as the Tibetans call it, is actually the main component of the Tibetan national dish. And unlike what the streets of Delhi and Bangalore would want you to believe, it's not the momo. It's samba. The dish is created by pouring tea into a bowl and adding chura, barley flour, yak butter, and sugar. The ingredients are kneaded together by hand until the mass reaches the consistency of cookie dough. Hiking up the mountains and needing a protein boost, people would reach into their bags and scoop out a blob of sambar. While Deepak was no traditional nomad, he was no stranger to long journeys on the road, much like his counterparts in Tibet and across the Central Asian highlands. What fueled the Mongolian conquest of much of Asia also fueled our trip to Spiti. The Tibetan Plateau is one of the most inhospitable environments on Earth. It's known to be the third pole. It forms the major portion of a vast upland area of ice and glaciers that covers some 100,000 square kilometers of the Earth's surface. Yet for thousands of years, people have flourished in this unforgiving landscape. One reason, of course, is their genetic adaptation, which enables Tibetans to use oxygen more efficiently, avoiding the potential lethal effects of hypoxia, or the condition that arises from the lack of oxygen. But the fuel needed to sustain their bodies was food. This is exactly what the scientists and the authors of the paper from the Max Planck Institute of Geoanthropology set out to understand. And how does one understand the food habits of ancient people when almost no organic material would survive from that time? So here is where scientific ingenuity and a lack of brushing teeth came into play. In the absence of dentists, ancient people often accumulated a lot of plaque on their teeth. This hardened plaque is known as calculus. Using a new method called paleoproteomics, scientists can investigate the food proteins that became trapped and preserved in ancient people's dental plaque. They analyzed all available human skeletal remains on the plateau, a total of 40 individuals, dating to between 3,500 to 1,200 years ago, from 15 widely dispersed sites. What they discovered was fascinating. Preserved in the teeth of many of these people were fragments of proteins derived from milk products. The protein sequences showed the milk originated from domestic herd animals, sheep, goat, and probably yak. This meant that around the time animals were being domesticated and herded was also the time during which animal milk was consumed and dairying began. The results showed another interesting pattern. All the milk peptides they identified came from individuals in the highest altitude parts of the plateau. These were the most inhospitable areas where growing crops was difficult. In the southern, central and southern eastern valleys, where farmable land was available, they did not recover any dairy proteins from people's calculus. Dairy, it seems, was vital to human occupation of the parts of the plateau that lay beyond the reach of even frost-tolerant crops. This is a vast area, as less than 1% of the Tibetan plateau supports crop cultivation. This meant that dairying was adopted out of necessity. While its use eventually spread to all of Tibet, it became an extremely sustainable source of food. Being dairy-free was not really an option for the Tibetans. The story of milk in the highlands of Tibet is markedly different from that of the plains in Asia. As we are enveloped in food movements right from veganism to paleo diets, we must remember to dip our toes into alternative histories of some of our most crucial foods. This would help us understand the context in which cultures made food choices and not judge people from the lens of ours. In a world where pushing for singular, oversimplified narratives is becoming the norm, we must seek out alternative histories. If you like this podcast, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IBM network. You can listen to us on the IBM Podcast app or ibmpodcast.com. You can also follow us on our social media. We are at IBM Podcasts on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to reach out to me, I am Utsav Memory on Twitter and YVTravel42 on Instagram.